Stevie here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to Opio Lindsay from Hieroglyphics, as well as Souls of Mischief. My favorite part of his interview was talking about the impact they had on the overall culture, as well as passed on legends. It's one of my favorite episodes. Thanks for tuning in. Peace. Welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show. We have a very special guest tonight, okay? And I'm personally hyped for this one. Out of all the guests I've had on the Stevie Weeby Show, this one is a special one for me personally. We got Opio from the legendary Hieroglyphics crew and Souls of Mischief, MC, producer, all-around recording artist. Welcome.
What love? Hey. My G, what's up, brother?
Was that good? Was that a good intro?
Yeah, man, that's all good.
Yeah. Can't believe you're here, dude. I'm a little nervous for this one, dog. Because, you know, people don't know, and I don't... Y'all are humble about your shit, but you guys pioneered a lot of shit as far as with this art and stuff. And I wanted to start on some Nardwar stuff. Like, you know, I wanted to hand you this and tell me what this means to you. And it's a Bob James taxi CD. So what's the significance of that?
You know, well, this, we sampled, Angela, which is the theme from Taxi, the television show, years ago, and I think that was probably the one song that really made it kind of realistic that we would get in a record deal. We had been doing a bunch of stuff and doing other songs and doing things and whatever, but that song was something that record labels heard and we're like, oh yeah, we can do something with this. So this record is, you know, that's shout out to Bob James.
Yeah, shout out to Bob, and that's yours. That's a gift.
Oh shit, right on. One love, brother. Oh man, thank you, bro.
And I don't normally do this, but dude, this is we're amongst one of the greats. I have a Jedi Knight in the Padawan apartment in Hollywood. I got you some sour jelly beans.
Oh man, we out here. It's up.
And I got you some soft licorice twists.
Word.
And then I don't know why I got you this, but I don't know if you fuck with this Dr. Browner's. This one's a different. This is a hard to find one.
Hamp Rose.
So those are my gifts to you. Just as far as my appreciation of you showing up to the Stevie Weeby Show.
Are you trying to say something?
No.
Now you know what's funny about this is I actually rock with the hemp, and I have never seen the hemp rose. I've never seen this, so. See, this is new.
Yeah,
thank you, brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And I can take that on the road with me on tour.
Yeah,
with me,
dude.
You know,
and you guys are working on something new, huh?
Yeah, Souls of Mischief is in the studio working. Got a new album in the works right now. Got a situation going with 88 Rising. So, you know, it's like a Bay Area Connect thing going on. Mm-hmm. It's been quite some time since we've released any music at Souls of Mischief.
What was the last one?
The last one was There Is Only Now with Adrian Young, and that was 10 years ago.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. The production's phenomenal in that.
Yeah, he's a genius.
Yeah. God, I don't even know where to begin with you, man. Like, cause I don't normally do notes and stuff, but with you, man. Oh, so Opio, is that your real name?
That's my God-given name from my parents.
Oh, that's unique. Cause my homie thought it was an acronym. He was like, hey, ask him if it means like opioid, like dopeness, and I'm like,
yeah, well, me and Tajay, that's his name, his God-given name as well, and we had rap names in the past. Mm-hmm. I won't blow his name up, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I was the original lyricist. That was my name.
Oh, that,
because like, OL are my initials, Opio Lindsay. So I was like, I'm the original lyricist. So prior to being Opio, that was my rap name. But we just figured, you know, we have these cool, interesting, real names. Like, why not just use them as our rap name? And that, and we felt more comfortable being called by our real name anyway. So, yeah.
And y'all started when you're real young, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, what's A Plus's name? Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to blow the man up because he ain't here, but yeah. Yeah, that's, A Plus.
Okay, A Plus. and then I got to give a shout out to Hyrule Oldies. That's, I mean, I still listen to those joints, man. Yeah. So when did y'all make those songs? How did you formulate those songs, man?
So we did a lot of stuff that was on demos and, you know, as we were recording records, some stuff never really actually saw the final cut of the album. Because we make a lot of music, even right now. We probably got close to 30 songs and we're trying to whittle it down to something that, you know, we love all of the music that we do. So it's hard for us to just say, that's one of the hardest things to do actually remove, songs from an album. So the Hyrule Oldies is one of those things where it's like kind of a collection of songs that necessarily didn't make it on albums or were part of demos or something like that. And we just put it all together and made it like a compilation so that people could hear some of our, and they're some of our favorite songs. So
me too. Yeah. You have isn't there like a version of like Batting Practice on one of them? Like a different version on that one, not on the album?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when you're working with samples, a lot of times samples don't get cleared or it's too expensive or whatever. So we had an original version of Batting Practice that, you know, is a fan favorite. A lot of people love that song. They got a chance to hear the original song. So when they heard the remix, they was kind of like, oh, this ain't really, you know, that song was loved. I actually really do like the remix. Casual produced it, and he laced us with a beat.
Yeah, and it's hard. It
the original hard. One, they're almost two different songs, but yeah, the original one was the sample just didn't get cleared, so we never used it.
And as far as, I've always wondered this, personally, like, what did y'all grow up listening to, like, as far as your influences? Because, like, me and my friends listen to y'all and, like, the Beastie Boys and the Far Side, you know, shit like Boogie Monsters.
Yeah.
But then what did y'all listen to?
I think everybody's probably has a little bit different thing. But, like, when I was a kid, I was really into reggae, probably first and foremost.
Oh, so Steel Pulse,
Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, you know, that was, like, all that was like my jam. But then I had one of my really close friends, his brother was into punk rock. What? So there was a lot of, you know, Bad Brain was like one of my favorite groups and stuff. So I had an eclectic taste. Mm-hmm. And my father was a trained musician and he taught music. And so he listened to a lot of jazz. So I got exposed to a lot of different, you know, Miles Davis and stuff like that. And my mom, we used to go to concerts and go watch Frankie Beverly and Maze at the Paramount Theater in Oakland. Mm-hmm. So I had a very kind of eclectic taste of music. I mean, I love all types of music, classical music, all that. So, but when I was just a shorty, it was like before I really got into hip hop, it was reggae first. Yellow Man was like a big, I was really into him.
You mess with Ziggy?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's
of
People?
Totally. Hell yeah.
I remember the post. Yeah, man. That was a good album, man.
Yeah.
You know, I want to give a shout out to Dell and Pep and all the other members of Hieroglyphics,
man. Yeah.
Because I look at Dell as like, he's like the Yoda of the crew.
Most definitely.
Am I far off on that?
He is the godfather of Hieroglyphics. I mean, he's a humble dude, so he won't, you know, you won't hear him saying that. But he made it possible for us to actually, you know, realize our dreams. Because without him, Hieroglyphics, I don't think, really exists. And you have all this incredible talent that's behind this. You know, you got Casual, A Plus, produced 93 Till Infinity. He's like this genius behind the boards. Mm. And without Dell giving us that shot, then you don't really get a chance to see everybody. So he was the one to really do that. And he was, you know, we're not that much different in age, but I was a sophomore in high school, he was a senior. That's kind of a big deal at that time. So he was older, he was more mature, he was just more serious about his craft and everything. And he, you know, he's always been like a leader, but he leads by example. You know what I mean? Like his work ethic is crazy. He's always doing music. He studies music also.
Music theory. I was going to bring that
he
up.
He reads. He does a lot of things. So like he doesn't a lot of. I kind of just kind of like get creative and I just vibe it out. But for him, I think he's much more has a lot more intention behind his art, and than I think people give credit to. He was definitely
ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time, but he was also part of his thing is he's original in every way. Sure. The way that 100%. He dresses and how the words that he uses, his vocabulary selection, everything, his voice, he does not, you know, he's not copying anybody.
No, not at all.
He's an original.
You know what song stands out that he did that kind of blew my mind is Worldwide. Cause I thought Unicron was a real dude, and I was waiting for Unicron to drop.
That's crazy.
But dude, that's how creative that, you know. Listen to Worldwide on No Need for Alarm, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Also, for some background history on Souls and Hyrule, there's a documentary you can look up on YouTube, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of explains the trajectory, the background, and how y'all met and stuff.
Yeah, there's two documentaries by the filmmaker. His name is Shamari Smith, and he did one for Souls of Mischief for our 20th anniversary. It was called Still Infinity, and then he did another one about the Casual Saphir battle, and that one's dope too.
Hey man, you did good, dude. hey, good job, bro. Dude, you ripped him, bro. Hey, you scared him out of all the MCs. I mean, listen to the hieroglyphics. Okay, the Hobo Junction versus Hyro Battle versus Casual, and listen to Opio's verses. He scares them.
Shout out my brother Saphir, man. You know what I mean? Like that. All that is water under the bridge. You know what I mean? That's like one of my loved ones right there. You know what I'm saying?
He had some heat though too.
Oh yeah, he definitely
that
did.
That Boxcar Sessions was a banger,
definitely,
dude.
Definitely.
I also want to bring up, I was listening to a Rick Rubin podcast, and he's interviewing Andre 3000, and they're talking about where they got their inspirations, and they brought y'all up. They said Eminem and him were talking about you guys and like your like the way you guys were innovating the rhyme structures and the multisyllabics, and do you want to speak upon that? A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought that was, you know, it's incredibly humbling to hear someone that has that much success and that much notoriety. And, you know, like Andre 2000 or Eminem, they really don't have to talk about us at all. They could never say anything about us. So the fact that, you know, they choose to highlight us, It's an honor. It's a respect. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a lot of respect for them as lyricists, obviously, because they're just, you know, they're masters of their craft. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've always been a big fan of Outkast. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like I always felt that we had a kind of a kindred spirit because we're from Oakland, and you know, there was the way that people try to describe art, they try to put it in a box and figure out a way to market it so they could describe it and sell it to people. So they're like, you guys are kind of like, you're from the East Coast or something. But what we were actually doing was we were the beginning of West Coast underground hip hop, mm-hmm. which is a vast amount of different groups. And some of the people that was on the forefront of that would have been like, you know, Hieroglyphics, the Far Side, Freestyle Fellowship, the Alcoholics, you know, groups like that were really kind of pushing the envelope early in doing that. And we were one of those groups that were doing that. So a lot of times people would be like, oh, you guys sound like you're from the East Coast. But the Outkasts, they definitely, you know, they're stylistically, you could tell the southern slang and all that. So I always had a lot of respect for what they were doing. Oh, yeah. And I loved just everything about them. Yeah, everything about them was dope. And an interesting story is one of the what we were actually promoting our the first independent release from Hieroglyphics, and we didn't, unbeknownst to us, Eminem is opening for us, but he is unknown at the time.
What?
So he came up and was like, "Yo, man, thank you so much for, you know, allowing me to perform, and I'm about to go and do the hip hop Olympics in L.A. And like, this is right before he was about to blow up.
That's crazy.
So I met him before, and we listened to it. He gave us his CD or tape or whatever it was, and we was listening to it like, "Yo, this is dope. This kid is crazy," because that's another. He had a very original voice, even though he was like a white dude. He wasn't really kind of cloaking himself in like this Black American vernacular or whatever. Like, he was hip hop, but he was himself. It was like he had this kind of, you know, white trash aesthetic or whatever, talking about doing drugs. It was very original. And so we were just like, but the thing that really struck us was his wordplay. His pen game was just nasty.
We were like,
yo, you hear what he's saying? Like, you know, it was raunchy and offensive and whatever, but the rhyme patterns and the schemes and everything was just dope. You know what I'm saying?
And y'all, as a collective, peeped that out. Like, was Dell into that? Was he into that?
Yeah, definitely. When we heard it, we were all blown away. We were blown away, that's crazy. For sure.
So you had like the demo before the demo of it.
Before he did the Rap Olympics and met Dre and they started working together. We had that. I can't remember the name of the tape, but it was, you know, there were songs that came out later that were on that, but just the production had changed and got, you know, Dre got a part of it and really ramped up the whole thing. So
as far as like the way y'all vibe as a crew, has it changed? Like, cause has technology like changed the way things are like, cause you could share files and, you know, cause back then y'all had to be in the same room, right? Vibe and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were, you know, I'm dating myself a little bit, but everything was analog. We were all 2-inch reels. There was no Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. There was no, you know, it was not as easy to make music at all. It was expensive, and it was
arduous projects. How hard was it back then, in like in 89, 90, 91?
Well, like, my first time ever going to the studio, I was in the eighth grade. And I went to junior high school with Casual and DJ Ture from Hiro. And we kind of like, you know, saved our little lunch money or whatever up to go and actually go to a professional studio. And we were thinking, you know, you just pay for the studio time and you're just in there, whatever. We didn't think about, oh, you got to buy the reel-to-reel tapes. Then you also kind of have to have a beat that you can rap over too. So we made a beat in the studio. We used their equipment. It was, you know, it was a lot more expensive than what we thought. It was harder. It took longer. But it helped us to kind of prepare ourselves to actually, when it was time to be in the studio years later, we had already kind of got our feet wet a little bit, you know?
Who produced like your first tracks? Is like, was it just all A plus? Like, who was producing for you?
Our earliest stuff, A plus was the main guy producing for Souls of Mischief, but then Casual would produce some stuff for us. Dell produced stuff, and then as time progressed and I started to produce stuff, Festo was producing things too. So but the earliest stuff was mostly all A plus. It was all him. And Dell produced a couple things and Casual did stuff for us as well.
When did Domino come into effect with y'all?
So when Dell got signed to Elektra, the A&R that signed him is Dante Ross. Shout out my boy Dante. I just talked to him today. But he was cool with Domino. They had met because Domino used to work at Groove Merchant in San Francisco. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't know each other. And Dante Ross, to his credit, was like, y'all need to know each other. Domino got beats. And wow. You guys need to come together. So as soon as we met him, it was just up, you know, because he was incredibly talented, and he just had the way that his mind worked, he had a much more sophisticated brain when it came to just hip hop and samples, and the way that he thought about stuff was way more advanced than what we were doing. And so he just added on to everything that we had going on. He was older than us, and he was just a little bit more experienced, and he just had a different... We're all from Oakland. He's from San Francisco. It was dope because we needed to have another set of ears that was... He definitely is not a yes man. Nope. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you don't want that really around you. You want people to challenge you to be like, nah, you could do that better, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. So he was good on every level for that. And so as soon as we linked up, we was like family. You know what I mean? It's been like that ever since.
And he produced a couple tracks off 93 Till Infinity, right? Like maybe
he did a bunch of stuff. He did,
like, he didn't he do I like take part in Eye Examination too?
That was it. Yeah, so Dell is produced Eye Examination. Mm-hmm. That's like his production. But Domino kind of tightened it up. You know what I mean? Brought added drums to it and made it like
crunchier,
way more of a stronger, you know, a song that, you know, you could actually release to the public. That wasn't just something that, you know, you demo it and it's cool and whatever, but it was some elements that was missing, and Domino like added to that.
Dude, yeah.
But he did a lot of stuff on 93 Till Infinity. He did Live and Let Live. He did.
Okay, that's right. I forgot
did,
the song.
This
yeah.
is How We Do. He did a bunch of stuff. So,
just to let everybody know, 93 Till Infinity is probably one of the best, not just hip hop albums, but overall albums. I'm talking, it's up there with Sgt. Pepper's, The Beatles, Neil Young, Harvest. Hey, dude. Props to that album, bro.
On, bro.
That shit. No, straight up, dude. That album, y'all better buy it. You know what? Straight up, that's the type of album. If you have no other album you want it before you hit the skate park and you only have $10, you're like, what? I can only buy one album. Oh, I'm getting that. 93 Till Infinity, dude.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, bro.
We just celebrated our 30th anniversary. We did 125 shows to like celebrate that record, which we initially what we were going to do was let's do 93 shows to celebrate 93 Till Infinity, which was kind of like a lofty dream.
Yeah, dude.
And, you know, to everyone's credit and Soul's Mission, we were all in on that. And it's not easy to get four grown men to do the same thing at the same time. So, you know, and this is post-pandemic. There was just a lot of things going on with that. And it was such a humbling experience because we had a whole new fan base. Because of streaming and just the time that album, it's gone, it's a generational thing. There are people that graduated in 1993 from college or graduated from high school in 1993. That's their joint. You know what I mean? And then there's people that's born in 1993. Then that's their joint. Mm-hmm. And now there's like...
They're kids.
Kids now. Mm-hmm. So the people that were born in 93, their children are now into the music. So, yeah, I mean, sure. It's hard to really describe what it is. I think one of the main things about that record is we were kids when we did the record. Dude. We were young and we kind of captured this youthful energy, dude. And then it still translates
and
to
it still,
kids
it
now.
Still holds up. That's when you know the album is good, because it still is the same as it was back then. It still holds up even right now, dude. Seriously.
I mean, I think what happens when you sample this music, because what's happening with especially hip hop in that era in the 90s is like you're standing on the shoulders of all this incredible music, in particular like black music. So artists like James Brown and, you know, these pillars of music and creativity, George Clinton, those are the guys that made it possible for hip hop to be a thing. So we were actually standing on their shoulders, and as we were sampling these records, we were kind of calling back to our ancestors and taking the energy from what they had did and putting it into our music. It's like a spiritual thing. So I feel like that's a reason why that when people sample music from the 70s or whatever, it's like you're really... You're bringing that energy that's there, and there, the energy of how they got it from it's deep. It's this very interesting connection that I feel is much more spiritual than a lot of people give credit to. You know, you're communing with your ancestors.
Yeah, dude, that's deep, bro. Yeah. I didn't mean to switch topics, but. y'all made the cut on this too. Okay,
totally.
So how did this go about? And I'm referring to Midnight Marauders.
Definitely.
And this is an East Coast group, right? Shout out to Q-Tip.
Oh man,
You're not on this version. This poster's bigger because the Far Side, y'all were on it. Far Side was
so
on
there
it.
Was what's that's the front of the
this,
album.
Oh, y'all were on the back.
So when you flip it over,
yeah,
the back, you know. So mm-hmm. like, you know, they had to make sure they put the OGs up there in the front first. We were just so honored to be a part of that process.
Dude, that's like some Mount Rushmore shit.
Oh man.
You know, like how did they go about, did they just call you up and say y'all made the cut, like, or did they just put it on your faces on the album?
Well, we were in the middle of kind of a bidding war when we were getting ready to get signed. There were several labels that were interested in mm-hmm. signing us. Ultimately, we kind of had our pick. And just the roster that Jive Records had, because they had A Tribe Called Quest, they had BDP, mm-hmm. they had Too Short, they had these artists that we all looked up to, so... A Tribe Called Quest, them being on Jive was a big part of the reason why we wanted to be on that label. And so as soon as we got signed to them, the very first tour that we ever went on was with The Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul. So, like, Posse. They, man, Paz, yeah, you know, shout out to them, RIP my man Dave. So they embraced us and showed us the ropes about what hip-hop is, you know?
Dude, that's a big deal, bro.
Oh, come on, man. It was a dream come true. It was unreal for us. And so when they did that record and put us on the album cover, we didn't, you know, you see it now, but it was just a photo shoot. We didn't know what it was going to look like, or you know.
They didn't tell you and you didn't know how the album was going to turn out.
We had heard the record. We did hear the record, but I didn't know what the album, you know, I didn't know how the album cover was going to come out. I know they had all these different iconic people that they wanted to be a part of the album cover, and when we were at the photo shoot, we met all of our idols. You know, Grandmaster Flash was there, Daddy O from Stetsasonic. I got a chance to meet these guys. I wasn't there when they were there, but there were some other cats like Boot Camp Click was there. You know, we chilled. We smoked out with them.
Was Black Moon there?
They was there. Okay, yep. So we was chilling with
Jungle Brothers.
Mike G in particular used to be at my man Curious George's crib.
Yo, shout out to Curious George.
Exactly. So
yo, I still bump that shit too, man. Constipated Monkeys, baby.
So we had a connection with the Jungle Brothers. But all of these guys are just, you know, they're larger than life for us. Like, even though I met him and I got the chance to chill with him at Curious George's house, and you know, MF Doom used to be there, you know, so like it was just George in particular was our conduit to what was going on in New York. We would just go there and go to his house, and something was happening in his house. Is like a vortex of creativity or something. Well, I don't know what the hell it was. Everybody was going there.
CM Crew?
All that. But he just had... He was, and he still is, you know, he's like just the embodiment of hip hop. And at his crib, it was just all these creative cats coming through there. It was dope.
Still do music, man? Curious.
Yeah, hell yeah, definitely.
Y'all should do a project with him, dude.
Man.
I mean, just to bring it back, totally. Dude. You know what I mean? Because, like, I know y'all were tight back in the day.
Oh, that's my brother. You know what I mean?
Because I remember you, when you weren't around, like, he would shout you guys out. And then when you guys were, like, doing interviews, you would be like, asking where he, you know, I noticed that.
Totally.
Like, oh, they have some kind of connection there.
He used to come to the Bay, and there was a music conference, the Gavin, mm-hmm. One of the big reasons why we connected with George was because he actually was an off the top of the head freestyler. So he would he had all these dope freestyles, and it was kind of there wasn't a lot of people that we were meeting that were really truly going off the top of the head and just thinking of stuff.
Who was really doing that, like you guys? Pharaoh?
There was a few people.
Organized
Curious Confusion? Curious George was definitely one.
Organized
I want to say, well, I mean, we met Organized before we ever came out. They came to Oakland.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
And we're just like huge fans of them. And some we had a friend of a friend that helped introduce us to them. And, you know, that's still Prince Poe is my man. Monch is my man. One of my best, you know, bros is OC. So it was like the whole, that whole, all of these people that we were meeting, we were kids and they were already out and established. Those were like our idols, you know what I'm saying? So Organized Confusion was like next level.
Dude, they were ahead of their time too, that Fudge Pudge and that shit. Their first album was fucking, it tripped me out, dude. The fucking, just the noise, just the fucking noises.
The second album was just an exponential jump. It was
crazy. The stress up. That shit was crazy,
like
too.
They just leveled up so hard. The beats, the rhymes, everything. Yeah. So, yeah.
Y'all do a collab? Hyro and Organized Confusion?
I don't know.
I'd pay top dollar to hear that, too.
There's a lot of artists that we have personal relationships with that we know and have, you know, commune with, but necessarily haven't done music, but I agree. I think it's high time that all of us, all of the bros come together, man, and just put something together.
Like, what about alcoholics like Tash getting on, like alcoholics, Hyro, like, you know, mashup, fuck, you know, you and organize you.
We've
and
had pure, some things, like, you know what I mean? We did some stuff with the alcoholics and did stuff with the Far Side. You know, it's, I think one of the biggest problems for artists is that we make music, but we're good, we're way better at making music than we are about putting out music.
And what do you mean by that? That's interesting.
You know, you make stuff and it's fun to make it, but the putting it out is a whole other process, you know.
What's,
so
what's the problem, like what do you think's the hurdle to get over that? Is it like just you get in your head, like, is
I think
it good
that's
enough?
Part of it. I think that's part of it. I, you know, it, that art and commerce don't really mix together. So, right, like, you make the art. The art is easy, but then the business side is a little bit more difficult. So,
yeah,
you know, that releasing music is used to be a lot more about the business side. Now it's a little bit easier, so.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on, like, the streaming? And, like, back then, y'all sold tapes and, like, hand-to-hand type shit. Y'all were, you know, pioneers of that shit, too.
You know, for me personally, I mean, I don't want to sound like I just don't care about, you know, putting food on the table, but I don't prioritize money when I make music. So I just want people to hear it and like it. Right. So for me, I do think there it's unfair the way that streaming is pays the artist. I think that's unfair. But I do think the fact that so many people have discovered our music through streaming, or, you know, basically they haven't paid for it, they just heard it, but they love it and they turn into fans, and they might not buy a CD or buy a song, but they'll buy a t-shirt at a concert, or they'll buy a concert ticket. So, you know, it's, to me, that's the more important than anything. I want people to hear my music, and I want people to enjoy it. And that's the first and the foremost thing. Now, a kid doesn't, if I was talking to my attorney or something, he'd be like, what the hell, you want to smack me in my face for saying something crazy like that?
Because you're all at that level. You
he's
need
like,
attorneys,
dude,
yeah?
You need to think about being paid for your work, which I also agree. But I probably, to my own detriment, I don't necessarily care about that as much as I care about people hearing the music and enjoying it. So I don't I don't want to say, oh, streaming is great, because it screws the artists and it's unfair and people don't get paid. But there is something to be said for people that have never heard my music ever before to be able to access it easily instantly. And listen to it and be like, oh, I like this. So that's something powerful about that. I would hope at some point things even out and it becomes a little bit more, you know, favorable towards the artists that create the music. Right, I think we should honor the artists that do that. I mean, it seems easy, but it's not. It's a hard life. There's a lot of effort, that time and goes into it. And, you know, but I think talking about that just takes away from people's enjoyment of the music. I want people to just hear it and have fun to it, listen to it, and just, you know, spread love with it. That's more important to me than anything else.
So what, like, as far as the progression of the gear as well, like, do y'all still use the same types of gear, or have you guys elevated that as well? Like, because I know Dell's always on to the newest samplers and stuff like that.
I think it's a mixture, because I have an SP-1200 that I've been using a lot more now. But, you know, with the advent of technology, it's always fun to have new toys, you know? And so, like...
Oh, I told you about... Remember, yeah, I sent you a picture.
Dude, that's so cool. So, I want one of those. Yeah. But when you have... I mean, I like to use new technology, and I like to work with different DAWs and all the new drum machines and stuff, but there's still something about, you know, the ASR-10, you know, the SP-1200. They have a very specific sound, and something about those old machines also special too. So I don't think one is better than the other necessarily, but I do think that some of the older equipment is still holds up even now, even with all of this dope stuff that's out.
But
now,
even like the MPC, the OG ones, people still use that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something about the circuitry and the sound that comes out of some of these machines, you know, it's just different from everything else.
You have the SP-12?
I have the 1200.
But in that, doesn't the RZA use that too? Or someone he from was, Wu-Tang was,
I mean, he people have used it a lot, but yeah, I know he was using maybe the EPS or the ASR. But the RZA is always, you know, he's another guy that he changes it. He's always getting new equipment, working with different stuff too. So
have you worked with any of the Wu-Tang dudes? I would like to see that too, man. Like, you, I mean, and like Raekwon or something, or you know what I'm saying, like someone like that.
That's always been a
dream.
That
would be sick, bro.
Because I feel like people talk about Hieroglyphics as like the West Coast Wu-Tang. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but people have mentioned that before. Like, you guys are like the West Coast Wu-Tang Clan because we're like a crew. We have a. There are some similarities. I mean, Wu-Tang Clan is so iconic, and they're so, you know, they have elevated and taken hip-hop to a whole new level. They, because of the work and ethic and what they've done, they've made life better for everybody that does hip-hop, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So shout to them. But, you know, I know the RZA and Method Man. I did a show with Raekwon not long ago. It's always love and respect when I see those brothers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I've always been a huge fan of Wu-Tang and everything they do. So I would love to tour with them, work with them, do music, anything. You know what I mean? I those guys are top tier, you know?
You know what I would love to see as a fan, dude? Have RZA, just RZA, produce a EP, like six of like some bangers, and make it like a RZA and Souls of Mischief album, bro. Oof. What do you think of, come on, bro.
That would be amazing.
That would sell like hotcakes, bro.
Oh, man, we got to make that happen.
So let's put you that on that? The universe. RZA, if you ever, I don't know if the RZA's going to check out this YouTube Stevie Wiebe show, but if you're out there, let's make that happen. Yeah, yeah. Let's connect these energies.
Definitely.
You know what?
I think it's possible, man.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
What I'm
like, and like, plus, it's like, you know, talk about, you know, let's talk about, I mean, this, I don't want to bring up a sour topic, but like a lot of you know, like icons have passed. You know, you mentioned Dave and Five, J Dilla, Doom, Guru, you know, Prodigy, Bismarck, like.
Totally.
So it's like, I mean, the reason why I'm bringing this up is like, time is of the essence. You
of
know,
course.
Like we have today, but tomorrow ain't guaranteed.
You are 100% correct about that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of times you just kind of think, it'll happen. Maybe, you know, you have this expectation that tomorrow is promised when it's not. So I totally hear you on that.
Can I bring up another, like, kind of cool scenario that I'd like to see? What if y'all did a collab with Kendrick?
Oh, man, that would be super sick. Because
he's on top of his game right now, bro. Oh, did he just do a concert out here?
Oh,
didn't he
man.
Just, like, do a whole amp, like, a whole Coliseum?
Oh, man, the pop out. That boy went crazy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? I just want to pick your brain on the Kendrick and Drake shit. Like, just
okay,
the
so
yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
When it first started, I was more kind of like, I want to wait and see, you know, what's happening. This got to be one of the most epic battles. I haven't seen anything go on this long and songs come out that fast. You know, one guy's released something, 10 minutes later, another song comes out. Mm-hmm. I think there's a clear victor here that everybody can agree on is Kendrick Lamar. And what I do see is, and similar to what we were talking about earlier, like art and commerce, like Drake is... I think he's an incredible artist, and he makes really good music that I like. And
it's not for everyone, but you know, if you like it,
he
like
is
it.
More on the side of like commerce. Definitely. And Kendrick Lamar, what he represents, is more on the side of like art. So to see art emerge as the clear victor, you know, that's an amazing thing for me. But I think he won because he just did it. You know, he had the better songs. He was more skillful at it. And, you know, Drake has survived a lot of battles over the years and emerged the victor.
Like the headlines,
you know?
Even like just like the articles and the headlines and the drama and stuff. That, yeah.
He's, you know, Drake has had some pretty epic battles in his lifespan. Mm-hmm. And he's come out on top. But, you know... Kendrick is a different animal. So, you know, in my opinion, I feel like he won, but I do think ultimately hip-hop won. It was a dope battle. Mm-hmm. To see, like, two titans in the game, the two top dogs really go at each other and really go, you know, and keep it just in, you know, with lyrics. And that's the proper way to do it. To do it on wax and do the songs and do that, you know, instead of trying to be like, oh, we're going to turn this into some violent affair or whatever. Like, they didn't really go there. So I was, you know, I was happy to see what happened. Mm-hmm. And it was dope to see that the ultimate winner was all about the art. So that was dope.
Yeah, and the crowd all knew all the lyrics. And
oh, man, come on, man. It's a culture clash.
Yeah.
You know, you have one guy that represents this, another guy represents it, and they're I wouldn't call them polar opposites, but they're so very different from one another.
Yeah.
That it's you can easily discern who's who. The voices are different. They're stylistically different.
Yeah,
they
sure.
dress different. They look different. Everything about them is different. And, you know, I feel that Kendrick Lamar won that battle fair and square.
I'm sure other people agree with you as well.
Yeah.
As far as, like, future collaborations of, like, artists or, like, projects you would like to get done, like, what are some other ones that, like, what about, like, y'all ever holler at Dre or something? Or like, you mentioned Eminem, like, that'd be kind of cool to have, like, an Eminem Hyro album.
Yeah.
I think people would tune in for that.
I mean, you know, I think there's a certain level of... You know, when artists get to a certain level, you know, like Eminem, he's so big and busy and doing everything. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's about money or resources. It, you know, if we were to be able to do something, I think it would happen just on the strength of just respect and love.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be dope if it could happen. But people are busy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I would love to see something like that happen, but I'm not. You know, I would never think like, oh, this dude is fronting on me because he won't, you know, come and do a song. You know, it's just it kind of is what it is. But there's a lot of artists that I would love to work. I was just talking. People were asking me about this, like Alchemist. That's when, you know, that's my bro. I'd be seeing him and everything, but we haven't really ever done any music together. So that would be dope to do something with him.
Yeah, he's got some dope production there.
You know, there's a lot of MCs that's out that I got a lot of respect for. It's hard to really just pin one person down and say, you know, these are people that I would like to work with. But I feel like you said, there's certain pillars in the game that I would love to see. Like, I would love to see some Hyrule Wu-Tang. I would love to see, you know, us be able to do something with Outkast or Eminem or, you know, mm-hmm. Pete Rock and Premier and all these type of things.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
What about Lars Professor? That would be tight, too.
Lars Professor, that's, well, you know.
I mean, he's one of the...
That's my bros right there, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, we... There have been things that have been tossed around and whatever, but it would be dope to do something with all of these icons, you know what I'm saying? I think that would be dope to be able to put something together.
Oh, what about Prince Paul?
We did a whole record with Prince Paul.
Oh, that's right, y'all did. Yo, shout out to Prince Paul.
Yeah, Prince Paul. That's, you know, he is the mad scientist, the genius. You know what I'm saying? I love Prince Paul, man. That's my guy.
How'd y'all link up with him? Oh, because y'all came up together,
well,
basically.
The way that album came together is, I want to say, okay, so I was promoting my first solo record, I think, and I was on tour with Handsome Boy Modeling School.
Shout out to Dan the Automator.
Shout out to Dan. Prince Paul. Drez was on that tour from Black Sheep.
Oh, Drez in Hyrule, dude. And
Casual.
Drez is one of my favorites.
Oh, Drez.
Drez is one of my favorites. People don't talk about Drez, dude. Drez
is
so tight.
He's so smooth,
dude,
with it, man.
Dude,
I love
Drez. Drez is tight. Shout out to Drez.
Yeah, he been working. So, I mean, we were all on the road together. And Casual was on the road. Dell was out there. And so me and Prince Paul, we had a lot of time to, like, chill and talk and... I was picking his brain about a lot of stuff. He has an incredible wealth of knowledge when it comes to hip-hop and history and whatever. So at the end of the tour, he was like, man, I really want to do something with Souls of Mischief. So I was like, say less. So we put it together.
What kind of gear was he using?
I want to say he was using the MPC.
Really?
I think so.
Yeah. What kind of, he probably had some crazy records, too, huh? Was he like sampling off like cartoon records?
He had a hard drive... with all of this music and all of this. I mean, he has so much stuff that I had never heard. Park jams and mixtapes and radio shows. I mean, God, his collection was crazy. Aside from the samples and the records and the beats and all that, his hard drive was mean.
Yeah. He could probably get a good deal off, like, one of the music programs with, like, kids and shit, you know, because I just got Fruity Loops. And I see Ninth Wonder's got his own, like, drum sounds and shit. I'm like, oh, that's smart. Yeah. You know, he's got his own collection of, like, drums.
I wonder if he's done anything like that. I mean, he's got a pretty entrepreneurial spirit, but I'm not sure if he's ever put out one of those things. But, yeah. We were just on tour with Cypress Hill, and he came to one of the shows. I seen
Shout
Prince
out to
Paul.
Be Real.
Oh, hell yeah. Shout out Sin Dog, DJ Lord, you know what I mean? Everybody,
man.
Muggs.
Shout out to Muggs.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Muggs. But, that's another album. I'd like to see Muggs just produce solely an album for y'all.
Yo, Muggs is,
you know,
Muggs is ill, man.
Yeah,
I love
like
the
just
stuff
DJ
that he's
Muggs
doing.
Messing with doing just for you guys.
He got joints. He just did something with Raz Fresco. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. All the stuff he's doing with Crime Apple is crazy. Like, he's that's another guy. Just a pillar, an icon. That would be so dope to be able to work with
him.
That
would be tight.
For sure.
So, hey, man, like, man, this is just, sorry, man. I'm trying not to cut you off. Usually, like, if you read that, hey, Obio, what does that say, that note?
Don't interrupt the guest. Listen.
And so I made it. Was I doing it better with Opio?
I feel like this is all good, man.
No. But with you, I had to tell myself in the shower, I'm like, dude, don't don't cut this guy off. Let him. And my homie, we're talking about it. He goes, you getting Opio? I'm like, yeah, because we grew up listening to y'all.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, man, you better be prepared. And then you know what he said? He's like, don't cut him off, bro. I'm like, what do you
that's
mean? He's
funny,
like,
man.
With this one, you can't cut him off. I'm like, fuck. Charles? Okay, thank you. That's respect, bro. I got a couple more questions. Let's talk about just like, do you got any solo projects you're working on? Or like, what's up? Is Dell working on some new shit? Or what's going
on? He's always working. He's got a thing that he's been doing now for a while called Manic Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a YouTube channel too. And they're putting in a lot of work. I want to say, yeah, I wish I could say it the right way, but it's Manic Mondays. I think it's spelled with a Z. Maybe we should look it up and get it right or whatever. Cool. But like Dell has been doing this Manic Mondays things for a while. I think they put out like 50 different things. You know, it's crazy. Beats, rhymes, and just, you know, it's a whole vibe. I went over to, he does it in his own space. He has a lot of people around him that care about him, that's passionate about music, and a lot of OG homies that I went to high school with that I've known forever, and they all working. And
what happened to Extra Prolific? I'm sorry, that was one of the main questions. What happened to Extra Pro?
He's still around, you know what I mean? Mm. We just, you know, sometimes when you're in the, it's a crazy business, and everybody is just, you know, everybody doesn't see eye to eye on everything all the time or whatever. So like, but shout to him, you know what I mean?
He dropped a full length album.
He did a whole one. He did two.
Okay, actually. Okay. I think the
other one was a little bit more like indie.
Yeah, right.
But he did the first record. He did the second one, and like I'm on both of his albums, and you know.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
He's still doing stuff.
What about have there been any female artists on Hieroglyphics, like on the label? Because y'all have your own label, obviously. People know that.
MCs
or just singers?
Well, Guapale, she's not a rapper, but she was.
That's the only one that I remember. Guapale, yeah.
But like, I've been working with my brother Breakbeat Lou. You know what I mean? He's a legend.
Producer.
Okay. He put also, if you know, like Ultimate Beats and Breaks, the albums that everybody samples. It was like Breakbeat Lou and Breakbeat Lou and Breakbeat Lenny. They put the records out. You know what I'm saying? And so like Lou is, that's my brother. And we started working. We've been working for a long time, and we got a lot of different, you know. None of the stuff has come out yet, so I don't really want to like.
No, that's cool.
Put too much stuff out there, but I got some dope female MCs on the record. And
where can cat? Okay, let's say a cat wants to get a feature with him, one of y'all. Do you do stuff like that? Like, do you even mess with that, or are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we always, you know, work with a lot of different artists all the time. And it's with all of the members of Hieroglyphics, there's a lot of activity. So between all four Souls of Mischief all have their own solo careers with their own solo records and things that we've produced for other people and also features that we've done. So there's a lot of music just within Souls of Mischief. Then if you go outside into Hieroglyphics, you got Pep Love. He's doing a lot of stuff. Casual got everything he's doing. Domino's producing for a lot of people. Dell's got his thing going on. So there's a lot of music when it comes, when you start to look into the whole
collective.
The whole universe of we have to offer. You know what I'm saying?
And so, like, do y'all have, like, a rate? Like, okay, like, if you want to, you want it, like, a 12-bar something from Pep, this is the rate. It's $1,400. Or is there some kind of, like, rating system of, like?
I mean, yeah, I would say there's, I think there's just a standard business practices of what people are charging and doing for certain things or whatever. But like I said, it's not really about the money as much as it is about the art. So it's kind of like, even if someone's going to pay you handsomely for doing something and it kind of goes against our creative energy, whack, I'm not going to do it. Like, obviously, if you were like, here's $1 million, that's not going to happen. No one's going to give me $1 million to do something that's terrible. But, you know, I don't ever work with anybody that I don't like their music. You know, first I have to like what you got going on, and then we can work together. And so
if it was a rich kid from Beverly Hills and his dad, no, hear me out, bro. And his dad's a multimillionaire, right? He owns real estate and he's a Hiero head nerd. And he goes, Opio, I want you $5 million. Will you please do an album with me? For $5 million,
Well, the thing, you have to see, this is how it works, and this is real. Like, $5 million, you know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it would be hard to turn something down. Like, that would be kind of ridiculous to do that. But there also is opportunities to make $5 million if you stay true to the game and really stick to the art and really do what you do. You can lose a lot of money trying to jump in front of some. So if someone's going to give you $5 million to do something, obviously you have to be worth that. You know what I mean? So why would you?
Beverly Hills High School.
It's kind of like if you did something that was super corny and just ruined your name forever.
No.
People would be like, we lost all respect for you. It's almost like not worth it.
Oh, so you're okay. So it's like guilty by association.
Yeah, you can't just play yourself and just do whatever for some. For, to me, like, I mean, I get it. $5 million is a lot of money. But I do think there's another way to make that type of bread if you really doing your thing officially.
$50 million.
Well, now we're talking about something a little bit different.
You do it, bro.
I mean, it's hard for me to really.
And they're going to throw in a boat. Yacht, dude. And they'll park it near the Oakland, wherever the pier is over there, dude.
I know it sounds crazy, but there's a certain level of just artistic integrity where it's so hard to really go against the grain like that. I'm not trying to be fake about it and just be $50 million, like, whatever. I'm just saying, like, I don't think that staying true to my art and doing what I'm doing and just sacrificing that for some money, it's almost like you just quit or something. I love to make music. I love to perform.
Art. Y'all are definitely about the art.
It's an art form to y'all. It's humbling.
For sure.
It's humbling to be able to do this for 30 years. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so, like,
30 years.
I don't necessarily chase the money. That's not really what I'm going for.
You know what I'm saying?
So, like, it would be. That's cool and everything if somebody wanted to do that, but I'm like, okay, if someone wants to give me this amount of money, there has to be something. Like, let's just say they wanted to give me $50 million, but I could make $5 million doing it the real way.
Doing it your way.
You know what I'm saying? And doing it my way.
Okay.
Like, which would you do? Would you go for the $50
million
and be like, okay, I have
basically 10
more Lamborghinis or whatever. It's like, what are you going to, you know, I'm not trying to just be fake up here and be like, oh, money is meaningless to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that people, if you don't have the creative mind, it's hard to see the value in that, but it's something that's priceless in a way.
Mm.
Art and how you do your thing and how you express yourself, it's not about money. You know what I mean?
It's about
the quality of your life and what you're doing. And you will be rewarded if you stay true to the game. But if you do weird stuff and sacrifice yourself and do fake music and do stuff that's outside of what you feel is true to who you are, it just seems painful.
Is there weird stuff in the rap game like that? Because I've seen documentaries about, like, these parties.
We've been independent for a long time, so
have you heard of these parties, dude?
I have heard about these mysterious parties.
Yeah,
but
they go in the room. And
a lot of times I kind of feel like, you know, I don't think a lot of that stuff is true. That's how I look at it. Cause is that really what's going on? Like, there was a story where they were saying they're a secret meeting and everybody came in this room and were like,
was Puffy,
hey.
Puffy was there?
Was he there?
I'm
saying, like, you know how they made this, there was this thing where they said, the record companies met in secret and said, we're partnered with the prison industrial complex. And they had a meeting or something, and it was officially discussed, and these people are going to do that. I don't think it's that cut and dry. When you start to follow the money and see that, you know, Citigroup or these huge financial institutions own Universal Music, and then they invest in military corporations. So if you follow the trail, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But to try to simplify it and make it this, you know, this kind of tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, I feel like it lessens the actual reality of what goes on, because there are people investing in the music industry that are then taking those profits and spending that in, you know,
but they're not
military
drinking, like, blood and like bowing down to reptilians and just all this weird like
personally me, I don't really buy into that. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I kind of feel like it's a little bit far-fetched. Yeah. And I do think that there are, for lack of a better term, there are conspiracy theories that are, like, true.
What about aliens? You believe in aliens, dude?
Well, let me just say this. Like, I've never seen an alien, right?
I haven't either.
But I don't think that in the vast expanse of the all of the galaxies and as many planets and as infinite space that goes on, that I could only imagine that I'm the only being humanoids that exists. But I do think that there's a little bit of kind of, I don't know, human ego to think that they're going to look like you in a way. Like, they'll have kind of be humanoid. They might be, it might be the innerverse, like the smaller you go. Even though you have this vast expanse, you could go smaller.
Like a Russian doll, like the universe within
like
the universe.
Inside of a molecule and an atom, and as you go further and further inside of there, it's hard to really necessarily try to just be like, oh yeah, there's an alien that looks kind of like me and this, that, and the third. So, I mean, I feel like I would have to say just mathematically, it makes sense that there would be other life forms, but, you know, I've never seen one in person.
Me neither. I would like to. the hours passed. This is the time I want you. How do people and listeners and viewers best, how could they best support y'all, Hieroglyphics movement and what y'all are doing? Like, is there, like, what's the website? How do they buy albums, shirts, and whatever y'all got going on?
Well, we got soulsofmischief.com. That's like the new, our newest website.
You guys got your own?
We have our own now. Hieroglyphics.com has been around forever. That's one of the first websites.
When Zach did it, right?
Yeah. Like in the 90s. That's been around for a long time.
So write that down, soulsofmischief.com.
Soulsofmischief.com, hieroglyphics.com. No.
Okay. That's how they could directly support what y'all are doing. They could buy albums.
You can get all of the, you can go to Hiero Shop too. You can get clothes, you can get the gear, you know what I'm saying?
And y'all got some tight shit. Y'all got fucking beanies. They got hoodies.
Got all type
of stuff, man. Check that out.
They got all types.
Yeah. How can one can someone buy that?
Yeah.
How much is that at the store?
This one was made for our, we just got back off tour from the Hieroglyphics was in Europe for the first time ever. Tight, so we make gear exclusively when we go on tour.
Limited edition.
And it's you can buy it on tour. But once we get off tour, we do make it available. But
how
this isn't available right
tight
now.
How much for that jacket, bro?
I feel like this is like a C-note.
Ooh, get yours today. SoulsofMischief.com. Hey, let's plug your the Instagrams and social medias and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my name is so long because I didn't really understand the power of social media at the time. But
spell
it's
it out, dude. OPO, we got the time.
OPIO Hiero, Hiero SOM. OPO Hiero SOM. That's me on
follow
all
today.
Social media platforms. Yeah,
follow today. Support what these are OGs in the game. They've been doing it, dude. Keep up the good work, bro.
Hello, brother.
I'm just happy y'all are still creating, dude. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dell again. Shout out to Pep. Tajay, Festo,
the whole
Hiero
crew, man, all my brothers out there, man.
Domino, all them.
Definitely.
Okay, and if you want to best support the platform, go to patreon.com/StevieWeeby. If you want to send any packages or letters, go to send your stuff to 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California, 90093. I'm also on Twitch. Are y'all on Twitch? Is Dell on Twitch?
He should be.
Dude, he should be twitching. Doesn't he play video games?
He does, yeah. We and him both game.
Oh, you game?
I
hey,
got
you
a,
game?
I, yeah. I had a Steam Deck at first, and then I showed him, and he got a Steam Deck, and yeah.
Hey, we're going to get Dell here one day, huh?
That would be sick, bro.
Hey, we're going to get Dell here one day?
That would be dope.
Hey, Dell, you always, I've tried reaching out to him 100 times. Please, Dell. Man, I'll roll out the red carpet. I'll take you out to dinner, bro. I'll get you the snacks you want.
You got to hook him up with the soda pops. Channel, man.
Yeah, whatever you need, bro. I got you. Yeah, twitchtv.com/StevieWeeby. I stream every other night on Warzone. And yeah, tune into that and subscribe there. Dude, that was sick, bro.
One love, bro.
Hey, hell yeah.
Hiding in the crevices, in the coral premises, in my Neverland like Peter Pan, checking messages.
I feel like a kid.
It's the way that you grow when you let them go on the edge of plateaus when they push you fall so low. Oh, oh, oh. I'm a silhouette that you'll forget, a shadow in the dark. I'm a millisecond part of deck that shuffle with the cards. I'm a vortice to heart like a monk upon the ledge, and I'm trying to do my part before departing from the edge.